When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
Home Club for details.
It's the Crossover Sports Illustrated's NBA show, breaking down the latest news, rumors, and everything in between. Here's your host, Chris Mannix and Rohan Lockhardy.
This is the Crossover NBA podcast. I'm Chris Mannix, joined as always by Rohan Lockhardy. And Rohan, we've got a lot to get into on the show today. Your first show of 2024. It took a couple of weeks off. We had the great Roy Hibbert joining me this past week. I encourage people to go back and listen to that conversation. Some conversation about current events and a little verticality talk as well. Some Lance Stephenson stories mixed in as well. But before we get into what I mainly want to talk about, I do want to briefly touch on what happened this past weekend in Chicago. You know what I'm talking about, of course. The induction of Jerry Krause, the former general manager of the Bulls, posthumously into the Ring of Honor in Chicago. Krause, of course, was the architect of those 90s Bulls championship teams. He didn't draft Michael Jordan, but he did put all the pieces around him, including Phil Jackson, the head coach, Scottie Pippen, Horace Grant, made the trade for Dennis Rodman, like all the things that made the Bulls, Jerry Krause put together. Now, he is a largely reviled figure in Chicago, mostly because people point to him as being responsible for ending the Bulls dynasty. Now, it's not that simple, but people point to him as saying, you know, he and his disagreements with Michael Jordan, with Phil Jackson, were the reason that the Bulls dynasty ended in 1998. And that perception was enhanced during the documentary The Last Dance, which was a Michael Jordan production, and did not paint Jerry Krause in a favorable light. So fast forward to this past weekend, where Jerry Krause, along with Phil Jackson and others, are being inducted into the Bulls Ring of Honor. And when they do the video for Jerry Krause, the crowd largely boos, or partially boos at least, however you want to frame it. And as they're booing, the camera shot goes to the widow of Jerry Krause, Thelma Krause, who is there looking distraught, as you can imagine. You know, this is supposed to be a wonderful moment for her late husband, an opportunity to honor his accomplishments within, you know, within the Bulls organization, the fact that he was the man who put together those championship teams, and the response is a loud chorus of Bulls. Now, I'm not going to paint all Bulls fans with one brush. There were cheers into that mix, but there were enough boos that it was audible on TV. And that was, you know, I think Adrian Wojnarowski used the word cruel. Others have used other words as well. It was bad. It was really bad, and a really bad look for Bulls fans who seem to forget that without Jerry Krause, those championship teams, many of them, if not all of them, probably are not put together. Jerry Krause is one of the great scouts in his time in the NBA. He bird-dogged a lot of these quality young players that made up the guts of that Bulls roster. you know, to see that and to see the reaction of Thelma Kraus while the crowd was booing was, just icky. Is that a word for it? It just didn't, it really wasn't a pleasant thing to see.
Yeah, man, it was really uncomfortable. It's really sad. I think icky is honestly a right word. It leaves a bad taste in your mouth. It's tough, and there's a lot at play here. It's such an interesting parallel, too, Chris, when you see what's happening with the Golden State Warriors right now, and like you see fans being like, we need to fire Steve Kerr, we need to trade Klay Thompson. You had Bob Myers step away, I think in part because he knew that there were going to be tough decisions that if he had to make, could make him a villain in San Francisco, would damage his relationships with the players that he spent years building. And you know, I think when you look at it through that lens, you realize like Jerry Krause, there are no easy decisions to be made there. Like you said, it's complicated. It's not as simple as one guy being like, I'm going to break up the dynasty. And it is tough because, you know, The Last Dance was obviously so popular when it came out, and there's this huge, rightfully so, public adoration for Michael Jordan. But I mean, at some point you have to wonder, like, you know, if Michael Jordan were to come out and say, you know, don't do something like that, that was not cool, I believe the tone would change immediately. I mean, he's someone mm-hmm. who went after Jerry Krause at his Hall of Fame induction. And, you know, The Last Dance is interesting because I really enjoyed it. At the same time, you know, I remember I interviewed the director before it aired, and I asked him, like, you know, he has seemingly an artistic vision as a documentary filmmaker, but then there's the truth of what happened, and then there's... But then there's also the idea that Michael Jordan has his thumb on the scale, right? You mentioned he was a producer on the documentary. And I think that gave him great control in how he was portrayed, how certain people were portrayed. And I think it just threw gas on the fire in terms of the way people view Jerry Krause. And it's very sad. I mean, you know, I started covering the NBA kind of long after he was out of the public spotlight. I don't claim to know him, but it's just unfortunate. It's really just unfortunate. And it feels like this doesn't need to be perpetuated any longer. It's been almost 30 years. You know, the idea that this still needs to be something that people are upset about, it's just a shame, honestly.
It is. And look, Jerry Krause loved Scottie Pippen, and he orchestrated the deal that allowed the Bulls to get Scottie Pippen on draft night in, what was it, 87, 88. Without that deal, there is no Bulls dynasty. There's not. Because we had seen what a Bulls team with just Michael Jordan and some other kind of supporting players around him had been. It had been unsuccessful, a first-round mm-hmm. exit for those times in the 80s. It was only after Scottie Pippen came along, developed that chemistry with Jordan, they became the most dominant 1-2 punch in the NBA. Jerry Krause deserves enormous credit for that. The Horace Grant stuff, Dennis Rodman, all the things along the way, all the guys that were acquired by the Bulls were acquired by Jerry Krause. He was an elite Hall of Fame general manager. And to boo him for something that took place like 25 years ago, yeah, look, could Jerry Krause have done some things differently? Sure. Like, it didn't have to get that acrimonious, although both sides deserve blame for that. Phil Jackson, mm-hmm. Michael Jordan, and Jerry Krause, they all share that blame pie for how that Bulls dynasty ended. But they won 6 damn championships. Like, they were and are one of the greatest dynasties in NBA history. 25 some odd years later, to boo the guy who is dead, the architect of that team, it is really remarkable to me. I'm a Bostonian, right? And we just saw Bill Belichick leave the Patriots. This to me, as I'm watching this all unfold, this to me would be like Belichick coming back to New England a few years later and fans in New England booing him because he was the one that pushed Tom Brady out the door and ended the Patriots dynasty. And Brady went on to win another championship in Tampa Bay. It's kind of like that. I mean, I was reading Seth Wickersham, and Don Van Natta did a great story about the end of the Belichick era. And in it was, you know, Bob Kraft, a quote from him, you know, from behind the scenes, sort of lamenting that Bill Belichick told him that Tom Brady couldn't play anymore. So this mm-hmm. would be like Patriots fans booing Belichick. I can assure you, when Bill Belichick comes back to New England as a head coach it is going to be a raucous ovation for him. Mm-hmm. It's just crazy to me that we're still looking at Jerry Krause as this villainous character when he put together a team that won six damn championships. Well, I really felt bad for his widow, because I know it. Mm-hmm. Look, Jerry, and this has been widely reported, and I didn't know Jerry Krause all that well. I had a couple mm-hmm. of conversations with him, you know, towards the end. He wanted validation, maybe. He wanted to be in the Hall of Fame, you know, mm-hmm. eventually got in, but after his passing. He wanted to be, you know, known for his accomplishments. He wanted to mm-hmm. to be recognized, that's the better word, for his accomplishments. And to have one of those moments take place and to see his widow just in that kind of emotional mm-hmm. state was tough to watch, man. That was really tough to watch.
And you know, people, I think, kind of criticize him for wanting that recognition. Chris, you know this. Everyone in this business wants to leave a legacy. That's the way it is. And I don't think that that should be held against him for wanting to leave his mark on the NBA, for wanting the recognition for leaving his mark on the NBA. When that's what people are in this business for. You know, they want to leave their mark. They want to say they impacted the game. Belichick should be booed, though. I mean, the guy,
no,
come
please.
On.
No,
A cheater. Ran Brady out of town. Average coach without Brady. Boo the hell out of that guy.
Okay.
Don't mention him in the same breath.
About the Miami Dolphins over the weekend. what a pillar of a franchise that one is. Like that, you know, really just the modern.
As long as you ignore the 21st century. Yeah, they did some good things.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, it's tough for Jerry Krause. It's tough mm-hmm. for his widow, and you know, I hope. And again, not painting all Bulls fans mm-hmm. with one brush. It's just the segment of Bulls fans that booed, and that's it. I will say this about Stacey King, the commentator for mm-hmm. the former Bulls commentator, who started out on the right track when he was criticizing the Bulls fans going after Jerry Krause, but then he's like, "We're not New York. We're not Philadelphia." You think that doesn't happen in New York and Philadelphia? What are you talking about?
A little too much sriracha. Sriracha from Stacey King. There.
Yeah, like like New York. Like every time I go to the Garden, there's an ex-Nick there, regardless of what era they played in. They are completely.
If you average like 6 points a game for the Knicks the 90s, like, you'll
get
it.
We're not New York. You had me, Stacey, until you went, "We're not New York."
I think it was
we're not Philadelphia. Like
Kyle Newbeck, who covers the Sixers, said, "We get criticized for booing Santa, who's not a real person." It's like, this is, we're lumped into this. So
lumped into
yeah. Little
Stacey, you had me at the beginning. You were on the right track, and then you just veered way off that track. Yeah. All right, let's talk about the Lakers. This is a team that we have been discussing almost weekly now, because ever since the in-season tournament, they have just been a mess. The most recent loss over the weekend to the Utah Jazz, LeBron James did not play in that game. Anthony Davis did play, was inefficient in that game. And look, even without LeBron, that's a game that a Laker team with expectations should be expected to be competitive in, should be expected to win a game like that. Now, the Jazz are playing great basketball. They are looking like the team we saw in the first 2 months of last season. Now, they've just turned it on at a different point in time in this year. But, you know, this was another loss for the Lakers. I think they're 2-6 in their last eight games. They have been a disaster since the in-season tournament, sprinkling in a win or two here or there to kind of slow the bleeding. But they are, that Jazz game notwithstanding, in the middle of a fairly long stretch of home games. You know, I think this home schedule, Rohan, is the come to Jesus moment here. Like, this is where they have to go on a run over these next couple of weeks. It begins Monday night against Oklahoma City. I expect LeBron to play in that game. I expect it to be a tough game. Oklahoma City is really good, but look, they beat the Thunder back in late December. These are the kind of games they're going to have to start to put together, because if they don't and they get to the end of the month and they got to go back on the road again before the February trade deadline, I don't know what can happen with this group, because this is now their opportunity to show that they are a functional team, that they are not a team that is middle of the pack defensively, which is where they are right now, that they are better than bottom third in the NBA offensively, that guys like Rui Hachimura coming back and Austin Reeves can play better. Like these next couple of weeks, I think, are everything for the LA Lakers. What do you think?
Absolutely. Real quick, I just want to say very quickly, you mentioned that they lost to the Jazz. The Utah Jazz are like the hottest team in the NBA right now. And I think Will Hardy. I know. I just want to say that I think Will Hardy should be like talked about as one of the best coaches in the NBA. That's all I want to say.
I mean, he is. He was talked about last year. Last year, they stumbled down the stretch. But, right. You know, his mind is rare.
He's one of the sharpest people I've talked to in the league ever.
Yeah.
I think there's a couple teams, Chris, that I think people are kind of very scared to write off. And this is where I commend you, because last year you hitched your wagon to the Lakers are making the finals and you came very close. You rode that team to the wheels fell off, and it was just an impressive commitment to the take. So in spirit of 2023 Chris Mannix, here's what I got. The Lakers are done. They're just done. They're 19-21. And I think people are so scared to write them off, especially after what happened last year. You know, they end up making to the conference finals, but they get swept. They don't win a game. The Nuggets are in firm control of that series. Listen, and by done, do I mean, like, could they make the second round? Sure. But there are too many teams that are better than them in the West. The Thunder, the Wolves, the Clippers, the Denver Nuggets, the reigning champions. And I just don't see the Lakers. There's not a move on the board for them to make that's going to make them better than those teams, number one. Number two, you know, Darvin Ham has said we're battling injuries. The rotation's been all over the place. I like Darvin Ham. I think he did a great job last year, kind of keeping things afloat there amid all the injuries. But LeBron and Anthony Davis have been healthy. They've played an incredible amount of minutes together. They're right up there with other top duos in the NBA. So I just don't buy the injury excuse for them. What it comes down to is, despite having LeBron and Anthony Davis, they can't put a good offense on the floor. And that's been a theme during LeBron's tenure in Los Angeles, frankly, is his teams haven't had good offenses. You know, remember that first year where people were like, is Anthony Davis the best teammate LeBron has ever had? And it's like, well, is it too much to expect them to have a top 15 offense every year if they're both still so good? And that's not to say it's AD's fault. I think obviously a huge part of it is just the constant upheaval of the rotation around those two guys. And they kind of opted into this size thing this year, but still with iffy shooting. And, you know, last year, at least you could say, listen, they need to get AD and LeBron on the floor and they need to trade Westbrook. Those are major moves that they can make to kind of turn this thing around. I don't think that's out there this year. I don't think Zach LaVine is going to vault them over the Thunder or any of the teams I just mentioned. So I just can't take this team seriously. We've had now a half season's worth of data to show that, you know, this isn't it. And it's they can't use the injury excuse this year because they've had LeBron and AD.
Yeah, I think to your point about no deals being out there to be made is the most important one. Last year, they had some flexibility. They could move off the Westbrook contract, attach a draft pick to it, and come away with, you know, the smorgasbord of Jared Vanderbilt and Rui Hachimura and all the players that they were able to acquire from mid-January on. This year, they don't have those options. Could they go and try to make a deal for Zach LaVine? Yeah, but that's going to take three players just to get to Zach LaVine's number, right? You're going to have to do D'Angelo Russell. You're going to have to do Rui Hachimura. You don't want to throw Austin Reeves into that mix, but I'm sure Chicago would ask for him. It just doesn't work. And, you know, Pascal Siakam out there is a trade option. Sure, the Lakers would love him, but they're going to get outbid because they don't have the assets other teams do for Pascal Siakam, namely Golden State, which I think is in the driver's seat when it comes to those Pascal Siakam talks. So I don't see a deal out there that is going to make them measurably better. So then you're just kind of crossing your fingers and hoping for internal improvement, right? So Rui Hachimura had what, like 17 points against Utah in his return. Yeah, good performance, you know, by Hachimura was his numbers. You know, 50% from the floor, you know, three rebounds and assists, that's nothing, but whatever. He played pretty well offensively, you know, gave them some decent numbers offensively. Can he continue with that trend? Can Austin Reeves continue to improve if he's going to stay in that starting lineup? Gabe Vincent is out there as this great unknown. Gabe Vincent has barely played for this team this year. Can he come in and be the kind of impact player he was for Miami last year? I know there were expectations on Vincent being a part of this rotation, a pretty good 3-and-D type guy, you know, had deep playoff experience with the Heat. Can he be kind of their trade deadline pickup when he comes back to the rotation in February or March? Jury's out if it's too late in the season for Gabe Vincent to be a real contributor. But I am not anticipating a needle-moving deal for the Lakers, because even if they're able to acquire a player like LaVine, it's going to cost them a lot. Even if they're able to acquire a player like Siakam, it's going to cost them a lot. And beyond that, like, I don't know what it is. I don't know what the deal is out there that makes the Lakers, like DeJounte Murray, same thing. Like, there's going to be a bidding war for DeJounte Murray when the Hawks really get serious. And we're going to talk about them because they should. If and when the Hawks get serious about trading Murray or Trae Young or both. So I don't know. I think it's all about organic improvement with the Lakers. And if these guys that were so good for them from February on last year can get back to being those type of players and getting that team back to being the type of defensive team it was once was, like, they're never going to be a great offensive team. Like, they're not going to be top 10 offensively. They don't have the horses for it. What they can be is a grinded out defensive team, like they were top 5 in the playoffs last year. And then, say, final 6 minutes, we got LeBron, we got AD, they're going to take us home. Like, that is the kind of team that can make them successful. What degree of success, I don't know, but they can be successful playing that way. But as long as they're middle of the pack defensively and this bad offensively, you know, they're not winning anything.
For sure. And I think, yeah, Vincent was definitely someone who I think they had high expectations for, someone who I think they probably thought would close games over D'Angelo Russell. I mean, I get that they've had guys in and out, but Ham's rotations have really been all over the place. And I think a big kind of issue with them this year has been regression from Reeves. I thought Reeves was someone who, you know, he wasn't necessarily a defensive stopper for them, but someone who they could throw on Steph Curry in a playoff series, for example, and chase him around. It's kind of been the opposite this year in terms of Reeves is getting targeted, I think, in a way that he wasn't last year, and is not necessarily holding up as well. And I think that's been an issue for them. You know, it's just hard for them to find two-way guys. I mean, Vanderbilt was someone who they finally got back in the starting lineup, but his shooting is so tricky. I really don't know what the options are for them. Because even, like you mentioned, Hachimura, LeBron misses that Jazz game. They had success at times in the playoffs playing him with LeBron and AD. You know, he had that big, some big games in the Grizzlies series. But you remember the Grizzlies were like, yeah, we want him to take those shots. And if that's how we end up losing, that's how we end up losing. That's kind of been the book on Hachimura, and it's going to continue to be that. And it's like, can you get away with his clunky sizing next to LeBron and AD? Like, yeah, I just think that it's crazy because I think we all thought they had a good offseason. I like Taurean Prince for them. I really like Gabe Vincent from them. But I think we've seen regression from some of the guys who played huge roles from them last year. And that's been a big issue. And it's just crazy to think how – I understand LeBron's gotten older. He's had his own injury problems. Like, that's been a big part of kind of the issues he's had in L.A. But – man, the Lakers were really kind of handed a golden ticket when LeBron decided to sign there. I mean, it's like he signed there because he wanted to play with all the guys on the team. They traded them away within a year. That they just not been able to find any measure of consistent success around. I mean, three coaches, constant overhauls of the supporting cast. It's wild when you zoom out.
On a micro level, if you want to zoom in, first quarters for the Lakers have been a disaster. They have been as bad as they usually are offensively, but defensively, they are 28th in the NBA in defensive rating in the first quarter of games. And they're it's like 25, 26 times they have trailed after the first quarter. So every single game, they are digging themselves out of a hole. Every game.
I mean, they keep throwing these new starting lineups out there too, and it's like just none of them have worked.
Nothing's worked. All right, speaking of nothing working, We're going to talk about the Atlanta Hawks here, a team that we don't often discuss on the podcast, but I think it's now reached the point where we have to have a serious discussion about what the Hawks are going to do. They're 15-23, just lost to the Washington Wizards. 127-99. That's bad. That's a bad loss for the Atlanta Hawks. They have a pretty good offense, eighth in offensive efficiency. They have an absolutely atrocious defense, 27th in defensive efficiency. So they are a one-way team. They've been that way for most of the last few years, it feels like. But this is, you know, as wide a gap, I think, as you've had. You look at last season, they were 7th in offensive rating, 22nd in defensive rating. Season before that, 2nd in offensive rating. Guess, well, 26th, that was pretty bad too in the 21-22 season. Go back to 20 and 21, 8th and then 21st. So this has kind of been a theme for the Atlanta Hawks. And, you know, they say the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. Well, this is what the Hawks are. They are, at best, a play-in first-round playoff team that gets beat early, and at worst, a lottery team. And it's sure looking like they're a lottery team right now. They have trade pieces, right? You know, you've got Trae Young, who is still a dynamic offensive player. You've got DeJounte Murray, who is a very good two-way player. These two guys do not work together as a backcourt. That's pretty clear. We've got enough evidence to see that much. What do the Hawks do here, you know, as we get towards that February 8th trade deadline? I mean, how aggressive do they need to be in either tinkering with this team or just blowing it up altogether?
I think it's time to be very aggressive. You know, I thought Trae Young gave an interesting quote the other night. I don't think it was after the Wizards game. I think it was a couple nights before, but I could be misremembering. He said just about how cerebral you need to be to play under Quinn Snyder and how it can kind of take time to pick up on all the things he wants to do.
How much time? How much time?
Yeah, that's
what
I'm saying.
He got
there
last year.
Yeah.
How much time?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's like, I'm not doubting it, but it does feel like it's been a lot of time. And, you know, when you kind of squinted when Snyder took over, it's like, could this be maybe a little diet version of his Jazz team? I mean, you don't have Gobert in the middle, but you have a good defensive center in Clint Capela, a good backup in Onyeka Okongwu. You know, it's like that Jazz team was loaded up with a ton of perimeter defensive talent. I mean, they had good pieces, Royce O'Neal, a younger Bojan Bogdanovic, but, you know, the Hawks have DeAndre Hunter. They have Jalen Johnson. You know, they have guys that you think that they could at least be average defensively. And, you know, people want to point at Trae Young. I think Trae has been, he's not a lockdown guy, but the effort has been there from him this year defensively. I don't think that you can point and say, oh, he's just the lone issue. You remember that year after they kind of made the conference finals, or I think the next year they flamed out early in the playoffs, and, you know, the front office at the time was like, maybe we kept the team together a year too long or whatever. I think it's pretty clear at this point that they need changes, and they have guys who are going to be attractive. I mean, it's also tough. Like, I was a big DeAndre Hunter fan, and it feels like he's never really taken off in the way that I thought he had the potential to be a much better player than what he is now, at least as a scorer. I mean, he's a two-way guy that I think the right teams are going to have interest in. They have Bogdan Bogdanovic that I think teams are going to have interest in. If I were them, I think Jalen Johnson's a guy you try to keep around. He's been probably maybe their brightest spot this season. But is he someone who, if you package with DeJounte, maybe you can get talent in return? I mean, they've obviously been linked to Siakam as well. I think they have to be aggressive because outside of Trae and probably Okongwu, I think you could talk me into trading almost everyone else on that roster. Because as easy it is for like two guys sitting in a podcast say trade Trae Young eventually and start over, that's not going to happen. I think he means a lot to that city. It's going to be very hard for them to get a player of his caliber back. We've seen under the right conditions, they can make a little bit of a playoff run. So to me, everything's on the table. And it probably starts with DeJounte, who I really like as a player. But I remember when they first got together, it was the same year Mitchell and Garland got together, and I really liked that fit more in Cleveland because both those guys had experience playing off the ball. That's not really the case with DeJounte and Trae, and they just never really seemed to figure it out. You know, even Murray's having a great shooting season this year. It just hasn't mattered, and I think it starts with you got to find a better complement for Trae.
Yeah, Trae, Okongwu, I wouldn't trade Jalen Johnson either. I like him a lot, and he's under one of those rookie deals, so you don't give up guys like that. Murray, to me, is the most likely to go because he still widely respected in the league for his two-way game. He's under a long-term contract, so you're not worried about losing
him. Team-friendly one, too.
After a year. Pretty team-friendly. You're looking at, I'm pulling up right now, $25 million next year, $27 million
he makes
million
less than Jordan Poole.
Well, yeah, there's that. Yeah. Yeah, he doesn't really cross the $30 million barrier, mm-hmm. you know, in yeah. the duration of that contract, which runs through 26, 27, player option in 27 and 28. I would think he'd be the one that you'd most likely deal. And I don't know what they're looking like. If I'm the Hawks, I'm not looking at Pascal Siakam. Like, I don't know what Pascal Siakam does for them. Like, does Pascal Siakam push them into the playoff mix? Yeah. But then your two options are losing him for nothing at the end of the year or giving him a big contract that may turn out to be pointless for a team that he doesn't move the needle for. So I'd be looking to move. Look, they gave up, what, two firsts for DeJounte Murray mm-hmm. in the first place? So I'd be looking to get that kind of value back in return for Murray and then seeing what you can do with Trae Young and somebody else alongside it. Because I think that's where, I don't want to say their problems flow from, but that's one of their bigger problems, that this backcourt just doesn't work. Like, it's just not...
Right. Can I...
Yeah.
So I think I ranked Siakam destinations and I had the Hawks pretty low because I agree he's not necessarily the biggest needle mover, but let me make the case for it in that they have not paired Trey. DeJounte was their big move to get in a second guy next to Trae Young, right? Like, this is going to be our second star, etc. The guy we stagger with, blah, blah, blah. You could at least say that Siakam is a much more sensible fit as kind of a perimeter player, someone who could play both forward spots, is a defender, can defend multiple positions. Like, if you're talking about the archetype of a kind of player you want to pair with a star point guard, I think it is a Siakam type. You know, he's had a couple all-NBA finishes. Do I think he's like a bona fide top 20 guy year in, year out, pencil in? Not necessarily, you know? But I think that what would worry me is if they make a Murray trade to recoup draft picks, what's the plan to kind of get in a second star next to Trey eventually before maybe he gets disgruntled and maybe he starts being the one asking out? And that's where it would get dicey for me. There's been reporting that he's so very much interested in winning now. So that, I think, would be the case for Siakam. It placates Trey to an extent, and at least there's some positional diversity there.
There is, but I would have an overwhelming fear that Siakam would walk at the end of the year. I mean, look, you've got a team like Philadelphia that is going to be lurking out there with like $50+ million mm-hmm. in cap space. And
the
if
Pistons,
you look at what they're... Pistons, but that's like, you know, I don't know what the upside is of doing that. But like, if you're Siakam, you know, you've got your old coach and Nick Nurse in Philadelphia. You've got a chance to maximize your value on a four-year deal. And you've got a chance to be a piece on a championship-winning team. Because think about what they're going to be looking for. Like, they're going to be looking for wings in Philadelphia because they're going to have Tyrese Maxey. They're going to have Joel Embiid. They're going to want somebody in between them. And Siakam can play multiple positions. Like, he's perfect, it seems like, for a Sixers team that could be shopping next summer. So I'd be very leery, unless I had a commitment from Siakam that, look, we're going to offer you a five-year max, which might be a mistake in and of itself. We're going to offer you a five-year max. You're going to take it. You'll be here at least under contract beyond this season. Mm-hmm. I would be very nervous about dealing Murray for a player. I'm not even sure why Toronto would want that. Like, they don't.
Yeah, that's another thing. I have seen that, and I'm like, they just acquired quickly. I don't think they're going to want
Toronto's,
to recreate.
Toronto's mindset, I can tell you with certainty, that Toronto's mindset is we want early 20s players. You know, that's why I think the Warriors are the front runner for Siakam, because Jonathan Kuminga fits what Toronto is trying to do. Mm-hmm. They're trying to build the team around Scottie Barnes, now RJ Barrett, you know, Emmanuel Quickley, guys that have played really well for them, I should point out, and, you know, add somebody along that age bracket. I don't know what DeJounte Murray does for them. Unless they can turn and flip him in the offseason for something else, I don't know what the upside was for that. But the Hawks got to do something. Like, I've muscled through a handful of their games in the last couple of weeks. They're just a tough watch, man. They're a real tough watch
right now, and I don't know how it's going.
I mean, getting carved up by the Wizards like
that was tough.
That's an eye-opening loss. Yeah,
that was kind of like one of those like, all right, this is the basketball gods indicating that we are not where we're supposed to be. All right, let's talk about the Warriors. Draymond Green scheduled to make his return to the lineup tonight, Monday night, I should say, for those listening on Tuesday, against the Memphis Grizzlies. Draymond has been out since early December with an indefinite suspension from the NBA. He was reinstated last week. He has been slowly ramping up, and now he is stepping back into what looks like a mess. Golden State has lost three of their last four, most recently a loss at Milwaukee. They have other losses to Toronto and New Orleans. They have two more games left on this road trip against Memphis and Utah. So theoretically, these are the kind of games that, at least on paper, you get Draymond back, you get some of your mojo back. But this Golden State team, Rohan, has had a lot of trouble finding a rotation that works. Like, it's pretty clear that Kuminga and Andrew Wiggins can't play together. You got to play Kuminga, though. Like, Kuminga's starting to play like the guy that you thought he was going to be when they drafted in the lottery a few years ago. Like, you got to play him. Now you got Draymond into that mix. You know, what do you think? How do you think this transition is going to be? How smooth do you think it's going to be for Draymond to work his way back into the mix?
Well, I don't know if it'll be smooth, but I'll say this. They need him. They definitely need him, especially with Chris Paul hurt now as well. They've had like a sneaky, terrible run of injuries between Gary Payton II's been out for most of the year. Chris Paul breaks his hand for like the millionth time in his career. Does he have like a punch card for hand surgeries? His next one is free. Like, always breaking his hand somehow. They need Draymond. They need his ball handling. They need, you know, he's, I think, still the player who works best with Steph offensively. They have a synergy on that end of the floor. They obviously can always use his defense. So they need like the focused version of Draymond. So I think he will at least help. You know, to what degree he can help, I don't know, man. Like you mentioned, I don't know what they do with Wiggins and Kuminga. On paper, there's no reason for them to struggle this much playing together. Wiggins' shooting has just completely fallen off this year in a way that's baffling. And I don't know if it's fallout of the personal situation he was dealing with last year. Something's changed for him. But the Wiggins we saw during their 2022 finals run, it was a completely different player than the guy we're seeing now. I mean, that guy, there's no reason that guy that we saw in 2022 playing defense on Jason Tatum in the finals, hitting big shots, couldn't play next to Jonathan Kuminga. But for whatever reason, it hasn't worked. You're right. Kuminga, you know, his per 36 numbers are really, really good. He gets to the rim. I think he's showing so much more scoring ability that they need to play him. You know, if you think about it, can they get away with playing a Steph, Clay, Kuminga, Draymond, Looney starting five, though? Is that enough shooting? You know, who's kind of the fifth in that small ball group? It's tough questions, man, and the pressure's mounting. Like, people, I think, are genuinely, and not inside the organization, but outside the organization, like, the heat's turning up on Steve Kerr, from fans, at least. I think people are, before the season, would not have entertained this. Now maybe would entertain the idea of, do we trade Klay Thompson? The Siakam thing, I want to see it just because I think this team needs a mojo change. Like, he's also like an iffier outside shooter and would make it an interesting fit there. But as presently constructed, I don't see this team doing great things. I think Draymond's going to help them. They need that type of player, but they need to make moves still.
So after the loss to New Orleans, which was the second straight blowout home loss, Steve Kerr said something to the effect of, we got to start showing some fight. And Draymond can help with that. You know, Draymond's going to bring energy. He's going to bring competitiveness. I think they'll show a little more spirit with Draymond back in the lineup. But we talked at the top of the show about the importance of these next couple of weeks for the Lakers. They are equally important, I think, for the Golden State Warriors. Look at just this next week alone. They've got Memphis, they've got Utah, and they've got Dallas before they get some time off to rest before they go home. That's a stretch where I think they've got to go 2-1 at. You've got to get two wins out of those three.
You got to beat Memphis. I mean, you got
to beat Memphis. Utah's hot, but you got to do your best there. And then Dallas, I don't know what Luka's health's going to be going into that game. So that's a winnable game, I think, as well. Then you're home and you've got Atlanta, should be a winnable game. Sacramento, winnable game. Like, Kings have not been world beaters. The Lakers, winnable game. You got the 76ers at home. That's going to be a tough one. And then going into the February trade deadline, you go out on a 5 road trips, 6 road games in 7 nights. Before you go out on that road trip, you've got to know what this team is, I think.
Yeah.
Because you go on this road trip and you do have some easy ones. Atlanta's on that trip. You got to go to Brooklyn, Philadelphia, Indiana, got to play against Phoenix. You got to know what this team is before then. So I look at these next 2 weeks as incredibly important, because I'm with you. I don't think that you can't be sentimental with this group. You can't, because you've still got Steph Curry who is, you know, for the most part playing like an MVP candidate. He has been great. All-star, high-level guy. You've got to surround him with other high-level guys. And if that means trading Klay Thompson, that's what it means. If that means trading Jonathan Kuminga to get Pascal Siakam, that's what it means. Like, I just think you got to... And I wouldn't be afraid to deal Kuminga for Siakam. And I know Kuminga could make them pay for that down the line, mm-hmm. because he looks like he'd be a really good player. But Pascal Siakam right now is what's better for that team. And he's 29
yes.
years old.
Yes.
You can't blink at giving him a long-term contract next summer. If you have Steph, Siakam, Draymond, and some of the other guys that they have in that mix, you're giving yourself at least a puncher's chance to compete in the Western Conference. So, you know, if you're Mike Dunleavy, you got to look to be aggressive if this thing continues to go either sideways or stays kind of the status quo over the next couple of weeks. Simple as that.
Yeah, I agree. Do you like the Siakam fit there? Because I don't think it's the cleanest, but...
No, I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. It's a defensive-minded guy. Yeah, I mean, he's kind of gotten over his shooting yips. I think he's going to be really good. Look, he excelled as kind of that number 2-3 option playing,
yeah.
you know, off of Kawhi and Kyle
True.
Lowry during that championship season. Playing off Steph, I think, is going to be great for him. Yeah, no, I like it there. And he knows how to win in the playoffs. Like, you know, look, Kawhi was the leader of that championship team in Toronto, but they don't win without Siakam playing to the level he played at. So I think he's a great fit there. I would do it in a heartbeat. It comes with risk, and obviously you'd probably have to send out, you know, one of the greatest players in the history of the franchise, but it's the way it goes if you're going to try to compete. If you want to just be kind of this team that, you know, coasts to the end of your dynasty, you know, with, you know, a first or a second round playoff loss, fine. But if you want to give yourself at least a chance to win one more championship, you got to swing big, I think, if things don't improve soon.
And I do think Steph is the kind of guy that is still capable of being the number one on a championship team. You mentioned playing at an MVP level. Like, the numbers are there. It is crazy to think that they haven't been dominant with him on the floor this year. That's how just kind of up and down the supporting cast has been. I am fascinated to see. It's like, do they have to trade Wiggins and Kuminga, or does it like Kuminga and Chris Paul get you someone like Siakam? The structure of that trade would be very interesting to me, but I agree. Someone like that would help them a ton, give them another half-court score or two, which I think would help a lot.
Yeah,
it's we talked about the Lakers too. Like, they're both on the outside looking in right now. I mean, and Houston maybe will drop out, but like, that's going to be a fight for both those teams just to make the play-in. And I like the Warriors' chances more, but it's going to be a fight this year just for them to make the playoffs.
Yeah, I agree. Can I finish with one bit of commentary on the New York Knicks? And this is not directed at the New York Knicks, the team. It's directed at the New York Knicks fans. The All-Star voting that was revealed last week that had Jalen Brunson in sixth place, do better, Knicks fans. do better. Because, look, Jalen Brunson, in my opinion, has a chance to be an All-Star starter. I mean, look, I think Tyrese Halliburton is going to get one of those spots. He deserves it. Mm-hmm. But then, at least in terms of the voting in the Eastern Conference, you've got Trae Young, not going to get a starting spot. Damian Lillard, you could argue, sure, made a great shot last night, but he's been kind of uneven. Donovan Mitchell, not the same guy we've seen in recent years. You know, Cleveland struggling as well. Tyrese Maxey, yeah, all right, fine. But look, the point is that
he is as good a case as any of those guys.
As good a case as any of those guys, right? And All-Star voting accounts for 50% of the starting criteria. So you got 50% for All-Star voting. You got 25% from the coaches panel. And you've got, it's coaches or players, I forget. I think it's coaches. And you've got 25% from schmucks like us in the media. And look, I can tell you, I'm giving strong consideration for voting on my official ballot for Jalen Brunson to be the starter. I got into this with my good pal Jerry Ferrara on social media, and then we were texting about it later. Trae Young's popular with the kids. Trae Young has his fan base outside of Atlanta. Come on! You are the New York Knicks! You have one of the widest and deepest and most passionate fan bases in the NBA. Vote for your guy! You should not be behind Tyrese Maxey.
The NBA doesn't let, like, K-pop stars influence voting anymore, right? Like, after Andrew Wiggins got rid of...
you can't do...
Okay, because I was going to say, you know, they also have so many celebrities. Like, you know, just get, you know... speaking of celebrities, by the way, if we're just saving things for commentary at the end of the show, can we just very briefly unpack... Do you think Emma Stone knows who Grayson Allen is, or simply waving goodbye to the Suns? Just, you know, kind of a general goodbye.
I gotta believe she knows who he is. They're kind of in the same age bracket. He's younger. Hmm. Though Grayson going gray is certainly made him look more mature.
Yeah.
I gotta believe, because, like, I remember seeing the video, and I was at that game in L.A., where, like, I think Bradley Beal had a whole new level of respect for Grayson Allen.
I think so too, and I got a lot of questions. I got a lot of questions.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, that was.
Yeah,
that was definitely not on my bingo card. Correct. Emma Stone saying goodbye to Grayson Allen. But the problem is, we didn't see the initial part of that. I don't think anybody
exactly.
Asked
yes,
him.
Yes.
And I didn't see it. You know, honest to God, I would have asked Grayson Allen after. I didn't see the clip until I got home later.
Right.
On.
Right.
Because that would have been a great soundbite, I think.
For sure.
If you'd be like, yeah, we've been tight ever since, you know, Spider-Man 2. Whatever. So, yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. But, like, just to put a button on it, Knicks fans, get out and vote, man. Like, your guy, like, I have a friend of mine, a good friend of mine, who is a passionate Knicks fan, goes to Knicks games on the road, was just in Dallas for their Knicks game. I don't think he votes. I'm convinced he doesn't. And, like, I don't think he votes because he's like, what's the big deal? Nobody cares. I promise you, Jalen Brunson cares. Jalen Brunson wants to be the all-star starter in the Eastern Conference. That means something to Jalen Brunson. So if you want to support your guy, Knicks fans, vote for Jalen Brunson for all-star. He should not be, like, 700,000 votes behind Trae Young. I'm sorry. He shouldn't be. He shouldn't be trailing Tyrese Maxey and Donovan Mitchell in all-star voting. You are the New York Knicks. Your fan base is enormous. Vote. Just go vote. That is my Jalen Brunson PSA for the day. All right, we will be back same time next week. Good stuff.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.